Glad you're with us. Good Monday to you. There are 70 days until Election Day. Are you aware of your voting rights? Do you know what ID to bring or what to do if the ID you do bring is rejected? We're joined now by Ben Griffith, author of America Votes, Challenges to Modern Election Law and Voting Rights. Ben, what do we have?
There are multiple types of voter identification. Most people are going to agree we've got to have confidence in the election process. When we had this great raft of voter ID laws go through about 30 to 35 states just within the last 4 to 5 years, the question was, why now? You know, do we have a serious problem with voter fraud? The two cases that have just come down the pipe center in North Carolina and Texas. These are examples of extremely restrictive voter identification laws. Voter ID per se is not bad. The question becomes, if it is so restrictive that a person, particularly a minority, an African American, that uses disproportionately the types of ID that we would see, for example, a state-issued ID for public assistance, and that's not acceptable in some of these jurisdictions. And then if those changes were actually made when it became apparent to the state legislative body that minorities, particularly African Americans, were beginning to vote in great numbers, in blocks, and suddenly there was a reaction to say, well, we need to scale that back. No one likes to be called a racist. No one likes to be said their actions are racially motivated. But these two courts in the Fourth Circuit, the North Carolina case, and the Fifth Circuit in the Texas case, both concluded there was evidence of racial motivation in enacting extremely restrictive voter identification requirements.
Back up for just a second, because you said something earlier I want to follow up on. You said some minorities don't have typical types of identification. Which ones are we talking about, and why don't they have those types of ID?
Let me give you the poster child, Mrs. Applewhite in Ohio. This was a case that was litigated just a few years ago, went all the way to the, in Pennsylvania, I'm sorry, all the way to the state Supreme Court. And it dealt with Mrs. Applewhite is like everybody's grandmother. She had voted in every presidential election since FDR. She did not have a birth certificate. She was delivered by a midwife. She never had a driver's license because she didn't need one. She comes to vote, as she had always done for 40 or 50 years, and she said, you don't have an acceptable identification. And the question suddenly is asked, why is this person not being allowed to vote? Is there an alternative? Is there a less restrictive alternative that would be available that would enable this person to prove who they are? That's what the courts, I think, in many of these cases are looking at, and that's what they're demanding.
We're speaking with attorney Ben Griffith, author of the book called America Votes, Challenges to Modern Election Law and Voting Rights. He's also an adjunct professor at Ole Miss. All right, so how big of a problem, I guess, is voter fraud that these states are trying to eliminate or reduce?
In-person voter impersonation is so rare as to be virtually non-existent. There are just not any cases that would demonstrate that that's taken place. Some of the courts have said this is a solution in search of a problem. And when the legislative bodies, particularly in the Texas and the North Carolina cases, were called upon to justify why are you putting this type of voter ID stringent requirement in effect now, their pattern answer was to combat voter fraud. We all agree voter fraud is bad. It's something we don't want. We don't want in our election system. It corrupts it. But is that a problem that justifies voter identification? Voter ID does not cure voter fraud. Voter fraud takes place a lot of times through corruption, actual corruption in the process, but not through a person coming in and saying, well, I'm pretending to be neighbor X. Mm-hmm. Those instances just are so minuscule as to be beyond de minimis. They're so minuscule as to not justify this type of restriction. Mm-hmm. So, yes, voter fraud is serious. Is it rampant? No. Is it rampant enough to justify this type of voter ID? No. I think that's what the courts are resoundingly saying.
So what do you do, say, come November 8th, Ben, when you are told no at your voting booth?
You vote either with a provisional ballot. Say you're in the precinct. Make sure you ask for a provisional or an affidavit ballot. That will give you time to say, look, I moved. You didn't have me on your records, but this is where I live. It will give you time to develop the information you need to give to the voter registration officials after the election to make your vote count. But don't just walk out. There are going to be a lot of challenges. You can imagine this is going to be a very intense election process from the very top of the ballot all the way down to the grassroots level.
Thanks, Ben. Ben Griffith. Again, the book is called America Votes, Challenges to Modern Election Law and Voting Rights.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.